Welcome to the podcast service of the Massachusetts Climate Action Network. Visit us online at massclimateaction.net or friend us on Facebook.
Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of January 14th, right? January 14th, 2018, sometime around the 14th. Today, we're joined by our frequent guest, the prolific commentator, Mr. D.R. Tucker. How are you doing, D.R.?
Doing well. How are you doing?
Very well. And we are joined by our favorite author and climate hawk, Ms. Mariah Tinger. How are you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
Good. So, this past few news cycles, there's been some interesting developments. And these are, so we're going to talk about the federal level for a few minutes, all right, back down there in Washington, D.C. There is an organization that we have spoken of often called, it goes by an acronym or the short name FERC, which stands for, it's F-E-R-C, which is the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. And FERC, my understanding was that FERC was developed or set up sometime in the 1970s during one of the first oil shocks to make sure that that American energy was properly and efficiently developed, right? So it's got a bias towards building energy projects, right? It has control over pipelines. You'll hear FERC come up in almost every pipeline discussion, et cetera, et cetera. So FERC is a big player. Many people, including myself, think that FERC is now a captured organization, captured by the industry. That is to say, the pipeline people and the oil industry basically tells FERC what to do. Of course, that's a political description. Everyone can form their own opinion. But FERC is generally... it's not the place you look to if you're a climate hawk. At least in the past, it hasn't been. So what has transpired? Do you want to tell the story, DR? I mean, I can go with, I guess I was going to talk about what Rick Perry wanted to say and wanted to do. Rick Perry being the marvelously talented dancer who's in charge of the Department of Energy, right? So Rick Perry made a proposal to do what, DR? Can you summarize that proposal?
Well, Rick Perry, the Energy Secretary, came up with this sort of convoluted proposal that would in effect serve as a form of welfare for nuclear and coal power plants. And the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission told Dancing Rick to basically shuffle off. They rejected a proposal. They rejected Perry's proposal. And the interesting thing about it is that the five-member commission of FERC was composed of three appointees of Donald Trump, which means that Trump's FERC team told Trump's appointment as energy secretary that he was completely off with this idea. They basically were of the view that this would be unfair towards consumers and unfair towards ratepayers, and was an attempt to sort of manipulate the market to benefit coal and nuclear power plants. And Rick Perry, his reaction was, for all intents and purposes, oops.
This guy is a storied. Yeah, it's my understanding is that Rick Perry, who is leading the storied Department of Energy. Remember, the Department of Energy, the guy who was Secretary of Energy before Rick Perry, Dancing Rick, the guy who was Secretary before him was Ernest Moniz of MIT fame, of the beautiful hair of Ernie Moniz. But he was the guy who had enough smarts to negotiate with Iran to get the Iran treaty, right? Ernie Moniz is a very, very, very smart guy and a somewhat of a proponent of nuclear power, but also of green, clean energy. Anyway, long and short, Rick Perry comes in, has this organization of very smart people, sends them off to come up with a proposal requiring, say, a coal plant to have 6 months of coal on site under the idea that this is improves the reliability of the energy grid to have 6 months of coal on site. But in fact, it's just a sop to the coal industry, who has to supply that 6 months worth of coal to the power plants. And as you say, FERC turned this thing down. I guess FERC has the responsibility for implementing such a plan. And FERC told, now, Do you think that the five FERC commissioners, the five guys on the Federal Energy Regulatory Committee, three of whom were appointed by our disappointing 45th president, three of whom were appointed by him, they all voted against this plan? I mean, was that an act of common sense? Were they trying to send a message? Do you have any idea what the politics behind it was?
The analysis that I've seen indicated that to do what Perry wanted to do would be to fool around with the market. And basically the opinion of the Trump appointees was that to the extent that coal and nuclear power plants are non-competitive, that is because of market forces, and that interference with market forces is, it, for all intents and purposes, an ideological no-no. So given a choice between, putting a finger on the scale in favor of coal and nuclear and violating market principles, they decided that it was more inappropriate to violate market principles, and therefore they gave Perry the thumbs down.
Interesting. I guess I hadn't thought of it that way, but that makes sense. Sort of market fundamentalism finally come to the aid of climate hogs, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think the irony, the most ironic thing that I saw somewhere was that Corey Lewandowski, now, if you don't remember who Corey Lewandowski was, but he was a close friend and associate of our so-called president, right? He was running the Trump campaign for several months last, God, year before last now. And he was the one who punched the reporter and got thrown off the campaign. He sends out a tweet saying that the quote-unquote deep state has rejected the Perry's energy plan. It's like, wait a minute, the deep state? But these guys were appointed by Trump. So it just, I guess, it points to the ingrown paranoia and self-delusion of these guys. Anyway, so there's the FERC story. We're going to keep an eye on that. But as of right now, it's a win for the good guys, right, DR?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and another sort of ironic twist along the same lines, I was reading about Zinke, Secretary of Interior Zinke was talking about all this. There's all of this. The Trump administration has approved a bunch of oil drilling, offshore oil drilling.
Oh, boy, yeah, yeah.
And, and Zinke said, that this will be responsible development that'll boost jobs and economic security. And then he said, while providing billions of dollars to fund conservation along the U.S. coastlines. And I have to say, I read that and I thought, you know, that's, as I was saying before, that's like cutting off your toe so that the doctor and your family can then, you know, make some money to fix you up. I mean, why would you, drill all this offshore oil and then put all the money into conservation? I mean, it's just, such a ridiculous thing.
Tell me more of the background on that story, though. It's my understanding that the administration has basically allowed the entire coast of the United States to be open for oil drilling? Is that the story?
Yeah, and Zinke said that states can, state, we're opening it all up, and then states can make a decision. We're going to listen to the states, what they think is best for their state, but we're just going to remove all of the obstacles, I think, essentially, to them being able to do what they want with their offshore oil drilling. And the governor of Florida, Rick Scott, came out strongly against drilling for oil off of Florida's coast, which, as a reminder, this is the man who allegedly banned the words climate change and global warming.
Mm-hmm.
Although, he denies it, but there's a whole bunch of evidence that shows that it has disappeared.
Right.
But he's saying it's really important to continue our efforts to take care of the environment. And, we really care about the environment. And, it's such an interesting thing, but I guess Rick Scott is, I think, looking for possibly a Senate seat. If I'm not sure if I've got that right, but and so there's some speculation that maybe this was sort of set up by the Trump administration so that Rick Scott could look like the hero by saying, no, we're not going to drill off of, Florida's coast for oil.
What I heard is that the Trump administration then reversed itself and said, okay, there will be no federally allowed drilling off of Florida. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And so on Tuesday they make this momentous decision, and then on Wednesday they reverse it for part of the and just the mental image is that the what we're talking about are oil drilling rigs off the coast of the entire east and west coast, and of course the iconic oil disaster was the Santa Barbara oil spill in 1969, which I remember. Mm-hmm. You guys weren't even twinkles in your parents' eyes then, but I mean back then there was off Santa Barbara an oil rig spill, millions of gallons of, and they're talking about the same thing here. They're going to put the, in fact, what I saw was that they were going to open Georgia's Bank to oil drilling. Now, I grew up in New Bedford, which is a fishing town, and everyone, I mean, Georgia's Bank is where all the fish are. So if you now go out there and put a bunch of oil rigs in the middle of that incredibly valuable resource, it's just incredibly destructive. I guess
it's a feeding grounds for all the humpback whales, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so the idea that we would just do this, I mean, I can only hope that other governors, and I believe they have, DR, tell me if I'm wrong, but other governors on the East Coast are now demanding the same treatment that Florida got, right? To be let out of the bag.
Yes, there are other Republican governors who have basically said, you know, treat us the same way you've treated Rick Scott, and basically stop this odd idea, you know. But it will be interesting to see how many of them get the same sort of special treatment that Mr. Scott has received.
Right. Well, yeah. So it's, we've got Maryland Governor Larry Hogan, South Carolina Governor Henry McMaster, and Massachusetts Governor Charlie Baker have all said they oppose the plan. And
oh, really,
you know, back to Yeah, yeah.
No, go ahead.
Back to what you were saying about, you know, that it, essentially what happened is Zinke met Rick Scott briefly at the Tallahassee airport, and then he came away from that meeting and said, yeah, you know, Rick Scott convinced me to change it. So we're, you know, it's drilling is going to be off the table when it comes to the waters in the eastern Gulf of Mexico and Atlantic Ocean off of Florida. So it really was one of these things where Rick Scott said, don't do it. And they said, okay.
Well, I mean, I guess that I find that stunning. I mean, I believe it, but the idea that Zinke is some sort of little czar who can change his mind and his will be executed by his minions, right? I mean, if they're going to allow drilling off the coast, you'd think they would have years of justification for that. And it's not a decision you take lightly enough that you would reverse it on the tarmac after a conversation with the governor. I'd be convinced you'd think, right?
You are talking about the Trump administration,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. I mean,
years of research before decisions get made there's no evidence-based decisions in this administration, I don't think.
You just said something interesting, Mariah, is that Massachusetts Governor Charlie Baker has come out and as to oppose this. I mean, I have not seen that. Is that a strong statement on his part?
The Washington Post said that it says Massachusetts Governor Charlie Baker opposes the plan.
Well, I guess I was going to say that here in Massachusetts, if you live on the East Coast, many of our listeners do, this is the time to call your governor and call all of your elected representatives, members of Congress, to make the complaint that we do not want this offshore. I think that Republican governors like Charlie Baker, I'm glad that he is opposed to it. He is opposed to the plan. You can call him up and thank him. Right. Call the state house and say, thank you very much for taking that strong stance, because these guys need to know that they're being backed. I mean,
I think that support to say, you know, thanks for what you're doing and please keep doing it. I think that's just as important as sort of complaining about the things they're not doing.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. Reminds me of the I was not in it, but the psychology class where every time the professor said a certain word, all the students perked up and smiled, and they finally ended up saying that word over and over again, sort of what is it, Pavlovian training, right? He got a good response, and he does it. So the same thing with Governor Baker. If he gets a good response, much like our president, who likes to get a good response. Anyway, put that aside. So there's the offshore drilling thing, which is a travesty, right? But nevertheless, we are we're trying to push back on that, and maybe Governor Rick Scott is leading us in that direction, right?
Mm-hmm.
So tell me, DR, the other topic that was of interest this week has to do with divestment. There's a bunch of divestment stuff going on. What did you guys hear about that?
Well, one of the major stories that's come out is that, and thanks for Mariah for alerting us to this, is that Mayor Bill de Blasio of New York has announced that New York City plans to divest $5 billion of fossil fuels. City officials, according to The Guardian, have set a goal of divesting New York's $189 billion pension funds from fossil fuel companies within 5 years. New York City's five pension funds have about $5 billion in fossil fuel investments. And in addition to that, de Blasio is planning to take legal action against BP, Exxon, Chevron, ConocoPhillips, and Shell for the damage those fossil fuel companies have inflicted upon New York as a result of its emissions. So he received praise from Bill McKibben and others for basically making it clear that which Trump will not do, de Blasio is willing to do.
Interesting. Mariah, what did you get out of it? I mean, what do you see on that?
So, I mean, to me, so I guess New York City's comptroller said that they're going to take those pension funds and promote sustainability with them. But when I look at divestment, I mean, I think initially when Bill McKibben started this divestment movement, he sort of realized it wasn't actually going to hurt any of these fossil fuel companies because somebody else would just pick up whatever got dropped. But I think that with this big, New York City's saying that they're divesting their pension funds, all of a sudden it's like, wait a second, this may actually start to hurt the fossil fuel companies. And, to be honest, why would you want to invest in something that is really doomed to fail? I mean, fossil fuels can't continue to succeed because the whole world is on this unstoppable train towards renewable energy. Mm-hmm. So, dumping those, I think it just makes dumping any of your fossil fuel investments to me makes good business sense because they're not going anywhere. I mean, put it into solar panels if you want to make mm-hmm. money off of your money. I mean,
I agree. Exactly. The question is when the symbolic divestment movement begins to put real economic pressure on stock prices. That's an interesting moment, right? And you start mm-hmm. taking these big chunks of money out. And you're right. It's like Exxon had, what was the book about Exxon? But they have a 40-year time horizon for every well they drill, right? That mm-hmm. well's going to be there for 40 years. I mean, they have to know that in 40 years, it's going to be a much different world than it is now, right? And there's a lot of money floating around there. You can't imagine that they're not thinking about it, right?
And I think mm-hmm. they have gotten into trouble. I think in some of these lawsuits, I don't know that they've gotten in trouble. I take that back. But in some of these lawsuits, it's included among that is that they have not, the SEC has, I don't think it's enforced, but they have a requirement that you have to loop sort of climate change, into your projections for your stocks. Mm-hmm. And Exxon has not been doing that, or they're being accused of not doing that.
They certainly have to list up the risks, right? The known
yes,
risks to
right,
the value.
The risks, sorry.
And so even if, whatever it is, if climate change certainly is a risk, they have to keep saying climate change is not a risk. And that becomes less and less credible claim as time goes on, right? And then to the extent that Exxon knew that climate change was a risk and didn't tell people, that's where they get in trouble with the SEC. And then that's mm-hmm. a serious thing.
And they have, California, Massachusetts, and now New York is all suing them, taking them to court. Not just ExxonMobil. I mean, a whole variety of these fossil fuel firms. And I think it's 2/3 of the fossil fuel 100 of the companies who produce fossil fuels are responsible for 2/3 of the damage. So really is a select group that is.
And that's, to repeat what you're saying, that's an important point I want to underline is that we can currently trace, I think it's 2/3 of the carbon in the atmosphere back to something like 100 corporate entities, right?
Yeah, 100
one of them is like the Russian state organization, the Chinese mm-hmm. state, Exxon, all. But I mean, it's only 100 organizations that are really, and all of that damage has been done in the last 30 years or so. All that carbon has been put up because the amount of carbon emissions keeps increasing. So compared mm-hmm. to 1900, we're putting a lot more up there now. And so you can make this case that these 100 companies are responsible for a lot of the carbon pollution that they knew was going to be dangerous, and now we've got to live with it. So that's that's a show we got to come back to because that's a deep topic, mm-hmm. and we have run out of time. Our listeners are all slowly heading to the door. The seats are emptying out in the upper gallery, so we're going to stop here. For those of you faithful listeners still with us, I'll tell you that we're going to put up links to most of what we talked about at the blog. It'll be at massclimateaction.org/blog. You can find us on Facebook. The link to the show on Facebook is @massclimateaction. You can listen to us directly on your smartphone using Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Overcast, etc. And as I say, if you're still listening, go to iTunes and rate us. Give us a ranking. It helps us a lot. So we'll close where we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, and because we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the reckless policies of the new administration not be accepted as normal, and that the United States put a long-term and equitable price on carbon. So thanks for being here, Mariah.
Thank you.
And DR, thank you for being here.
Thanks.
Thanks to everyone for listening. It's been a pleasure talking. We'll talk to you again next week. Bye-bye.
Thanks for being with us. And until next time, be green.
Very cool.